Well, that's not going to work.
Why?
Not it works for now. Not it works.
You can hear me though, right?
I can hear you really good, yeah.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, great.
You sound good, loud and clear.
Man, you sound like a champ.
Right there.
Hello and welcome to Tribal Research Specialists, the podcast, where we will be talking about important things. That's not going to work either. Hello and welcome to Tribal Research Specialists, the podcast, a podcast dedicated to chatting about... Hello and welcome to... Nice, rich...
Attacked.
Nice, rich, deep audio. People love that.
They love that.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're doing it.
They need it. It gets the people going.
I can do some post-production and get it. It sounds good, though. I'm not going to say. I'm not going to say it doesn't sound good. It sounds good. It sounds good.
I mean, but what would what would my headphones being plugged into the mic change in the sound?
Oh, nothing. Okay. Just that you could hear yourself.
So this is a moot point.
It is. The point is moot. The point
so let's
is
just
moot.
Move on.
Moving on. Hey, I want you to listen to something. I want you to listen to this.
I need to academic smudge before we do this.
No. Yeah, you need a smudge with someone's old thesis that nobody reads. Just burn that up. We're gonna smudge with the thesis, an old thesis. What is that?
A thesi. This is a little Crow language manual.
Oh, a cheat sheet. Hey, that's a good. Okay, where'd you get it? Where'd you get the cheat sheet? Did you find it on the road? At an open house? You cut out, so I couldn't hear you if you're saying something.
I wasn't saying anything.
Oh. Well, I asked you a question, God darn it. Where'd you get it?
Oh,
where'd you get the pamphlet?
It's one of those summer language institute things.
Oh, okay, you didn't get it during a diabetes walk or a fun run table?
I got it actually at a diabetes awareness bazaar.
And you don't
know,
tell
those
me
those people who don't know about diabetes. Yeah.
Followed by a native fashion show. Those are taking off.
Okay, all right, let's start.
But that's a good one, though. I think it's a good one. It needs some banter. We'll hit it later. But I want you to listen to this.
Okay, listening.
I want you to listen to this. And I want your take on it. Are you ready?
Yep.
Here we go.
I can see where deeply rooted cultural people would say to give it personhood would imply that we understand it. You know, and it kind of has this implication that it's like us. And I can see them getting kind of frazzled about that. But from a law point of view, I get it. I totally get it. And I almost think that's the way it was. That's the way they used it. They're using it as a form of control and power. Because if you go in there talking cultural stuff, they're not going to get you. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Hear that?
Yeah, what was that all about?
That was you.
I got that, but what the hell am I... talking about?
What are you rattling on about?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So this is cool. This is cool because, all right. So this is related to the thing you had in your hand, the pamphlet about language. Been a lot of efforts, revitalize language, revitalize cultural pursuits. Anything you put revitalize, we're going to revitalize a method of revitalization, whatever. Right?
Yeah.
But I think he said something pretty important because we were talking about personhood of a river in that conversation. If you remember that episode 31, personhood. Rivers. And you brought up this good point. I think that relates to a lot of things it relates to a lot of things about Indians trying to do Indian things. Do we really understand it well enough to speak as an authority about it?
About Indian stuff?
Yeah. So in this case, I'll give it context. So we're talking about personhood for a river and the complications around that. But then you interjected with this great point. Is that, do we even understand it well enough to say, yeah, it deserves this title? We talked about all kinds of complications related to that. Can it really even be classified as a person? We talked about the many things that how a river cannot be a person. But more importantly, I think that is that key thing that you said. We don't even understand it well enough to be, to be telling what it is or it isn't. And then further, you said that the law that's kind of being created to around the idea of personhood, was this the form of power and control in under some legal authority? Now that in itself just kind of negates a lot of ideas related to cultural pursuits, because I mean to write a law about ceremonial things, for an example, we can't do that. That's not where that thing is housed. Because number one, I guess I'd ask myself the question, do I understand it enough to be an authoritative person to write, to commit it to American or Canadian or some, to written law? That's huge, man. That's like, mm-hmm. that seems in a way, to me, it seems pompous to say, I understand this well enough. I can write a paragraph about it and then it is law.
Yeah. Maybe I accidentally said something smart, you know?
Well, I mean, that's debatable. that's what I'm asking you right now. Again, think about that statement you said, and in relation to what you know about ceremonial practice, but not even that, even outside of the ceremonial practice, into the everyday native life. How much authority do you feel you have, or even someone else who's like the most versed in that topic, to commit it to a piece of paper and say, this is what it is? Would they do that? That's the question.
No. I don't think they would. Yeah. And I even in my current position as kind of like a cultural head for the tribe, I don't think I have any authority.
Yeah,
but I think the power of of resource law and like using whatever loopholes in the law or whatever avenues in the law to gain some sort of authority or say, I think, see, I used to think like the law was tricky, right? So
yeah.
So for example, like this idea of personhood, and like if I published, or not published, but if I gave a talk one day and I said, hey, man, this idea of creating a river and giving it personhood is nonsense.
Yeah.
There was a time I would have not said that because I felt like it would have hurt the case. But that's not how the law works.
Right.
The law isn't predicated on that. So just like in a murder case, right? Like it's not... It's really not the pursuit of whether you did the crime or whether you didn't do the crime. It's is there enough evidence to prove that? And right. So just like in this case with personhood, it's not our job in the Indian community to say, is that even a thing or not a thing? But for the sake of law, Is there enough evidence to prove that? And I think that's where we need to focus, because sometimes we can get caught in like these real like minute details to where we work ourselves out of something, you know?
Yeah. I believe that.
But on the flip side, here's the scary part about doing this stuff with ceremony. You create doctrine. You unknowingly create doctrine and ceremony by doing these kinds of things.
Yeah.
Because that's not how ceremony works. That's not how cultural history works. That's not how religious practices work for tribal people. They're living, right? So that means that whether we admit it or not, they evolve.
Yeah.
Now, the nucleus might stay the same. I actually heard that today. This guy,
the nucleus,
said, you know, our ceremonies, our nucleus might stay the same, but they've changed over time. Mm. And he's the head of the Crow Tobacco Society and all the ceremonies involved in that. And so coming from him, that was a powerful statement, you know?
Yeah.
He said that to me in my office. And I thought that was refreshing in a way for me to hear him say that. So this idea that what is personhood to us now may not be personhood to us in 20 years and might not even be the same in 10 years.
Yeah.
So I feel like we have to be a little more cautious about using the law for the sake of authority, because we can unknowingly create doctrine for our own culture.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do. And, I think the tribal governments, the tribal government structure that was handed to tribes through the IRA, that whole, the constitution, I think folks embrace that too much as, like you said, like doctrine, you know. Well, we got to follow the constitution, the tribal constitution. What does the tribal constitution say? We should follow that, or using that as an argument point, especially when it comes into things of a cultural nature. You see that, but also you see it resource law, like hunting laws, tribal hunting laws. Those all of a sudden get thought of as a traditional practice. Like at one point in time, I can't remember the exact date, but there was a buck law that the state had passed to where you could only shoot bucks and you couldn't shoot does. And you can imagine the surprise by those that still living off the land that, you know, well, guy, you know, you need fresh meat. And it's irrelevant to a written document whether or not you can hunt a doe or not. But then all of a sudden, you know, you fast forward to the future, and then folks think that might have been the traditional practice. Like you said, it's exactly what you said. It becomes indoctrinated. And yeah, you see that. You can see that also in I don't know. I guess you could think of it in terms of like someone researching some past tradition. So they read it somewhere, and somewhere it says that this was done at a certain time, and then it becomes solidified that was only done at that certain time because it was written without understanding the context of the time period.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then there's the statement further that you said about, okay, well, that's a form of like trying to gain some power and control over whatever, right? So this idea of personhood, this idea of laws to control whatever hunting practices, whatever. Even they even created a law to control the gambling on the res. They said Indians, and this is tribal government, Indians can only play stick game on Sundays. That was a law passed on a reservation by a tribal government. Of course, this was back, I think, in the 50s or 40s or something, trying to keep Indians from drinking, I guess. I don't know. But so if we fast forward today and we see a number of people writing things about Indian stuff, and the consumers of that are reading these things, and then they think that that's it. They think that's what it is, and there's no flexibility around that. That's dangerous, like you said, very dangerous. So what's the, so what then is the solution? What's the solution? Is there one?
I don't know.
You're the expert, man. I brought you here tonight to supply answers.
No, because I don't know what you would do, because we're still going to use the law.
We have to, right?
Legal system for any gain. Yeah, we have to. It's our only.
Yeah.
It's our only rook in the game, right? We don't,
right?
Because we don't really have a queen. I mean, but
well, Canada does.
Oh, come on.
Anyway, go ahead. Keep going. Keep going. Okay. Yeah, it's our only rook in the game.
So I think it's very possible.
Yeah.
For us to believe in a system that we know is completely flawed and not the best. And I think that's what's happening. I think somehow people have adopted this like belief in everything, whether it's people, social customs, research.
Yeah.
And Indian people have adopted this to where we have to believe in something the same all the time. Like,
We can't have
duality, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's possible for us to believe in the law, the letter of the law,
okay,
and not believe in it at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I think the truth is, I feel like that's where I stand. I stand in this place where I acknowledge that these things are the best practices for the moment in that realm.
Yeah.
But I also believe that there's a whole other thing that doesn't necessarily affect, and it's possible to live at the same time in them. Just like it's possible to be, we say it's not possible to be like a Catholic in a medicine man, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I've come to kind of believe this, but the fact is there are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So whether that's our own personal belief, and we can make these arguments, like we could say, well, is it really possible? Are you 100% this or whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. But it's still the fact that in practice, there still are people who are practitioners of culture and they're Catholic.
Yeah.
And we can't argue with that. That's an unarguable fact.
Yeah.
So yeah. Just like you can have the law and know it's not good for your tribe or not good necessarily for your people. Mm-hmm. But it's still there and it still functions and it still works. So I think somehow we've adopted this belief that there's only one truth. Just like you can still be intelligent and productive and be flawed. Like,
right.
we don't believe that that's possible for someone to be both.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't believe that about the law. We don't believe that about our own culture and our own ceremonies. We don't believe. I don't know where we get that from.
Yeah. That's a strange one. That's a strange one. And that's like, well, okay. So it's like this too. It's like fighting back against this idea of, we had the one episode where we talked about walking in two worlds.
Yeah.
You remember that? You kind of went off. You kind of had a moment. And you said,
what
no.
What did I say?
You don't even remember. You must have blacked out. No, he said, yeah, we don't, it's one world. I live and breathe in one world. You know, two
in
worlds.
In this case, yeah, I thought you were making fun of me for saying that. I guess.
Well, no, yeah, I am, but I'm not.
In that case, that's true. Like, right. Like there's not this idea that like there's my Indian hat and there's my white guy hat. It's really both. It's always happening at one time.
Yeah.
Now, is it possible that we're in the first four or five generations of having to negotiate that? That's a fact, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I think that's an important thing to note. That's an important thing for people to understand. And I think natives do it too. And I think we try to fit ourselves into that hat from the past and the hat from the now. But we're not, man. I don't think we are. When we're not that those people from the past. We wake up every morning and to an alarm clock, which is a colonial construct. Colonial, I said it.
Oh,
yeah, no. I know. I tried.
Wah, wah.
Colonial. Anyway, yeah, so it surrounds us. It surrounds us every day. So,
yeah, I know, agree.
Show me the one person who's traditional, ultra tradish, in the way of our ancestors. You're not going to find one person like that. No way. And I challenge anyone. No, I better not. Anyway, yeah. So then we're stuck with this weird. We're in this weird place. Now I want you to listen to this clip.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yep.
You're just ready. Here we go.
I'm super ready.
You're super ready. Mm. All right. Well, let's super play it.
I'm real skeptical of any time. I'm skeptical anytime these major political powerhouses like US, Canada, I mean, Australia, Russia, like if they're going to hand something. And I'm using the term hand something loosely, but to tribal people, like, what's the catch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Because if it's personhood, that means that it's subject to all things in personhood. That means a beginning and an end. It right. can and have they, a death.
Yeah. So skeptical. Skeptical of... I guess what we have to do. So this navigation of this legal structure, of this social structure, we have this in hand.
Oh, dude, I thought it was still the recording.
You thought it's still going? Come on, man. Look at your screen. Okay, oh, you can't see the screen, ain't it?
No, I can see.
Can you see me?
I can see you. But I had my head down and I was
contemplating.
I was in deep thought, eh?
I can't even remember what I was going to say. I can't remember what you said now. Wait, let me listen to that again real quick, the first part.
I'm real skeptical of any time. I'm skeptical any time these major political powerhouses like US, Canada, I mean, Australia, Russia, like if they're going to hand something, and I'm using the term hand something loosely, but to tribal people, like what's the catch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, so I think the history of Indians dealing with the government, there's this inherent thought that we're getting tricked. We're getting bamboozled in some way. So
hoodwinked.
Hoodwinked?
I thought it was hoodwigged.
Is it hoodwigged? I don't know. There was a show called Hoodwinked.
That was a cartoon, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a cartoon. That's why I thought it was that. I don't know. What I was going to say about that. God darn, I forgot now already. We have this skepticism about it. And, what was I going to say? I forgot already. God dang it. Anyway, some thoughts on that. And maybe I'll jostle it.
I think I still agree with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do too. Like we have the skepticism. And I think how does that affect what we do?
You know, it's weird about a law like this. And then working now within kind of this whole world of resource management. A law like this personhood thing ultimately probably won't do anything.
Okay.
It'll be like a toothless law. But for Indian people, it will. Like, we'll be sitting at home and it'll give us this sense of like whatever, you know, and that's where it'll affect us. And in the non-Indian world, it'll have no effect on anything. Yeah. In fact, most of what I see, life goes on as it is. The business, as usual, will go on. So it makes me wonder, though, what the trade-off is for something like this. Because so if we like pursue these laws and these designations, whether it's personhood or traditional cultural property or a cultural landscape or whatever, these designations are eligibility for the National Register. However, were you going to use our work to do to get a designation? Ultimately, that means there's a trade-off. And in what I'm seeing now in my work as a preservation officer, that's always what it is a trade-off.
Okay.
But I think you're getting at that anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was. That was the question. What are we trading off when we prescribe to the written law that we have to navigate anyway? So let's establish something. We have to do it. We have to operate within the law of whatever respective nation that we are a part of, including our own. Let's put our own nations in there. So the Crow Nation and the CSKT both have codified laws and constitutions, right? Is that right? Am I right saying that? Crow tribe has codified laws and a constitution, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you got to follow that.
Well, yeah. Under the 1934 Indian Reorganization Act, it required that you have these certain kinds of facets of your government.
Yeah.
But the Crows did not
they
did not accept the IRA, so a non-IRA tribe, meaning we had the right to choose what type of government we had.
Yeah.
We ultimately in the long run chose a three-branch government marrying the United States government, which doesn't work.
The glory of the US government founded in the Iroquois tradition. Is that right? I don't know. Is that debatable?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's very debatable. I think.
Yeah. Well, anyway, moving on from that. So yeah. So we have to operate from this layer of laws: federal, state, and tribal. That's the Indian reality. Those three layers of tribal law, and in doing so, we make a trade-off. And I think because we're not willing to make a trade-off for certain things have not been committed to law. And I think, and I don't know, maybe I'm way off, but I think this idea of this personhood for a river, because the statement you said, I don't understand it. I don't know why it hasn't really gained. It wasn't even an option. Like in the time of the two, three generations before us, they never said when they wrote the Constitution, oh yeah, write in that the Flathead River is a person too. That was never written into the law because it wasn't even a concept or a thought. Because I think because of all the things we said in that episode, because I don't think we're willing to trade off certain things. But I don't know if the belief was held that was even a thing back then. I don't know though. So what have we traded off then? That's the question. What have we traded off by adopting?
And I don't know.
You don't know?
Yeah, I don't. What do you think? What have we traded off?
You weren't paying attention, were you?
No, I was. But I don't know. I mean,
yeah, I don't know either.
I think maybe we just traded off leaving them alone. So for whatever reason, that whatever the pursuit was for getting the person, it typically had to do with the protection of something, right?
Yeah.
Or to give the river rights.
Well, I mean, I wasn't speaking specifically about personhood for river. I'm thinking about in general, when a tribe caved into the pressures of the government and decided,
the trade-offs using money.
Trade-off was money.
It's money.
But what did the tribes lose also in that trade?
Sovereign immunity. I don't know. We got to give a shout out.
To what?
We got a dedicated listener in Bloomington, Indiana named Tommy D.
Tommy D. What up, Tommy D?
Yeah, Tommy D. So give Tommy D a little message. Send him a little shout out.
Tommy, I'm gonna do some slam poetry about Tommy D.
Oh, dude.
Tommy D. Yeah, we're bouncing on my knee. And I said, does Abraham Lincoln know? I couldn't think of nothing else. I don't know, man. I can't do slam poetry.
His donkey says, whoa. Tommy D. Oh, Tommy D. E. D comes before E. E equals MC squared. Tommy D.
Oh.
Bloomington Tommy D.
Yes. Oh, also, Wild Gallery.
Wild Gallery Oklahoma or Texas?
Texas, I believe.
Texas, yeah.
Wild Gallery in Texas. Larry, let's do a little shout out to Wild Gallery. Yeah, it's in Texas. Wild Art Gallery, helping to sponsor some of the things we got going on here. So yeah, you know, head on over to
what town is it in?
Austin, Texas.
Okay, so when you're in Austin, Texas, you guys go and stop at Wild Gallery, Art Gallery.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Get over there. Tell them that Tribal reach you. That you're there. You're there because you heard us on the pod. and just to go circle back to old Tommy D, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know anything about Tommy D. Okay. all I know is my nephew Jacob's over there and said, hey, Tommy D likes your podcast, listens to the podcast, supports the podcast. So thank you, Tommy D. And and good luck in Bloomington, whatever it is you're doing in Bloomington.
Thanks, Tommy D. And Wild Gallery. WYLD.gallery.com. I think that's it. So,
Tribal Research Specialist for sale. Send us your money. We'll say anything you want us to. Yeah.
We'll slam poetry.
Yeah.
Your significant other. We've got a slam poetry service.
We need a pancake house to coffee house to do this. To get us a sponsorship.
I don't know what I'm fishing for. I don't know what I'm fishing for.
Just hit me with your best shot.
You got to hit me with your best shot.
Oh yeah, you sounded like Tonka.
Yes, that was the goal. Yeah, I mean, we got rid of some things, some pretty important things. And one of those was, I think, something that was really this idea of social order and social control, I think, was lost in that exchange. But I think it was,
yeah.
I think it might have been on the way out anyway, just because of just how things are being modernized anyway. I don't know, though. I just don't know. But. To assign authority in a way, well, okay, but the crows don't do it in a similar way that I'm accustomed to on the CSKT, right?
I don't know.
There isn't a vote. Like someone nominates themselves or applies to be on a council, and then people vote. And that person might win and become, what do you do? What do you got? Got yourself a nice roach on there.
Yeah, well, we're talking Indian. I figure I better get Indian.
Get Indianed up, man.
I was, yeah. Crows, like people run for positions, right? We have a legislative body. We have, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just run for the position, and then
that's it. It's right?
voted on through like the public. The public votes, not the. So under the Crow Constitution, the anyone over the age of 18 is the general counsel.
Yeah.
So we're all the general counsel.
Okay. Everybody, anybody can vote, and anybody can run for an office.
Yes, you have to pay your filing fee.
You have to pay your filing fee, but you decide whether you're going to run or not.
Yeah, this is where I would say that the Crow form of government is really entwined with Crow culture. And I don't know if this is necessarily good or bad. So the way it happens is one of your clan fathers or something will come to you a lot of the times and say they want you to run. And a lot of times there are these kind of these little meetings. People will say, hey, we're all going to meet at this guy's house. We want you to be there. Yeah. So you'll go there. I'm not saying this has happened to me, but
basically say
we've been talking about it. We want you to run for such and such position.
Yeah.
And typically they'll pay your filing fee and then you run.
And so is that...
It's not a formal part of the process.
That's what I was wondering.
It's not. In fact, it can get really weird because there's cases where a lot of people that don't typically want to run for anything, but they respect the culture, that they'll say, well, my clan came to me and they said they wanted me to run, so I'm going to run.
And so do people also... run just on their own without
so
that happens as well.
Okay
so there's a mix,
and it's happening. It's a mix, but what I'm saying is like it's not totally independent like we're thinking. Like any person can run, you know.
Yeah,
because there's also been cases like, for example, like if I was to run for, let's say, a vice chairman of the Crow tribe, right?
Yeah.
And then my brother-in-law was going to run for the vice chairman of the Crow tribe. Yeah. And it's my sister's husband.
Yeah.
I'm obligated, at least the way I understand Crow belief, I would be obligated to bow out. I'm not going to run against my brother-in-law.
Okay. But none of these things are written.
No, they're not written. No. They're these kind of unwritten. You know the old adage.
You know, the old adage. I don't know it. What does it say?
Well,
no, I'm just kidding. I know what it means. So yeah, so that's the thing. That's the thing. So there's some things that are not written into law, but they're still practiced to a certain extent.
Yeah, in feeds over here. Feeds. So like when you're running, if you don't feed, you're probably not gonna win.
Right.
Right. Like public feeds, having these public feeds, come and eat, come and make a plate. Hey, tell your family, come and make a plate. Blah, 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 blah. I'm cooking a beef. I'm donating a beef to our district. Blah, blah, blah. Come and make a plate.
Hand out a box of oranges.
Yeah, like actually, literally, like hand out groceries. In the old days, during the chief system, leaders were people who could provide those things.
Yeah.
Or had the skill to say, hey, I brought this in. And I'm going to distribute it amongst you, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what would be the issue if that was written as law or as part of the process of selection of leaders?
I think it could really affect the organic form of leadership.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I do.
A good example is my great-grandfather. His name was Max Big Man. He was never a chairman. He was never an elected official. But anyone from that time, from the mid-1920s to about 1950, understood Max Big Man to be like the leader, especially of those, what they were calling the River Crow people, or like Crow Agency, Reno District people.
Yeah.
He was the leader. It was across the board that most people seen him as the head man. But he wasn't elected. They had the council, they had the executive, the chairman, the vice chairman and stuff.
Yeah. And
So we still kind of have those, these people who are headmen.
Yeah.
So if you want certain families, you'll pursue the headmen of those families.
Right.
And in some cases, women, you know, I'm not, yeah. It's not necessarily determined by men or women, but so they'll call those people and say, hey, we need your votes. Because yeah. if you come, and that's how it works. Like a lot of families, my family doesn't do this, but a lot of families will get together.
Yeah.
They'll have a family meeting. They'll say such and such is running.
Yeah.
We're going to vote this way.
Mm.
So basically the patriarch or the matriarch of that family
yeah.
is deciding for the whole family how they're going to vote.
Because
in the old days, they would have followed that leader. They'll say, we're going to follow him.
Mm.
He's our chief. He's our leader. We're going to follow him.
Yeah.
So
writing those things down, making them part of the tribal law or tribal constitution as it is today would not be a benefit to that process. Because you say it should be an organic process. So implying that it's not a rigid or a static process, that it there's something about it that's changing, or that's there's flexibility.
Yeah, and I guess I don't know how to articulate that part of it. I don't really know, but yeah, you're on to the right thing. Like it's there's something there, you know?
Yeah.
So if we like write a process down,
yeah,
we could inadvertently alter the natural system.
Hmm.
And I don't know if we want to necessarily do that, because I also don't know. I don't necessarily believe it's the right thing to do. Like, I don't think the way we're doing it, the unofficial way we're doing it, is probably not the right way or not the best way to do it.
Right. So it would alter it in some fashion. This is what I'm trying to understand. I mean, I understand it, but I'm trying to for the listener to draw it out. So what would change about writing it down? How would that system be altered?
But doesn't evolve.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't evolve, and it needs to evolve, right?
Yeah. For example, like crows are pretty stubborn about people speaking Crow.
Yeah.
So 30 years ago, if someone ran for chairman who didn't speak Crow, they wouldn't even have a chance. They didn't even have a chance.
Yeah.
Now that's not the case. Had we written laws back then saying these are the requirements to be our leader.
Yeah.
You limit the pool, plus you take the vote away from the individual. So the individual might say, well, I wanted that guy. I wanted to follow that individual.
Yeah.
And they may not speak Crow or may not even be traditional.
Yeah.
If you're saying, well, no, we have to pick this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to wear a cowboy hat, or they have to do, you know what I mean? Whatever it is, it's like you don't want to inadvertently stunt the system.
If you don't wear a King Roper hat, you ain't got.
Hey, if you don't wear a King Roper hat, you ain't worth it. You ain't coming around here. Yeah, we don't like your kin around here.
We don't wear Wrangler hats. King Ropes.
We don't wear King Ropes around here, pard.
So that's the big issue, I think. And just to apply some more evidence to this idea that we talked about personhood for a river. Number one, we don't understand it. So that's a far different thing than what we're talking about right here. This is human stuff. Human stuff. And we barely even understand some of those things. I mean, we understand them per generation, we understand certain things, but things evolve. And I think, and let me know from your knowledge of these, of your ways and of your people, was there a lot of evolution in prehistoric times of that social order, or that the humanness things?
Well, okay, so that's a tricky one, because that's acting under the assumption that I know that, right?
Yeah. And that's an important statement. So keep going. What's the next tricky thing about it?
So the next tricky thing is that prior to the horse, we know that cultural evolution happened. It probably happened quite a bit slower, and then when the horse came, it ramped everything up, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. So, and really, from the time of the horse to now is only a couple hundred years. So you figure about the amount of cultural evolution that happened in 250 years, 300 years. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. That's like a lot of change. And the fact that we're still here and we kind of still have a pretty basic understanding of who we are, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable. And in fact, that there's ceremonies that exist where those objects they're holding or they're using come from the time before that. That's nuts, man. That's so wild. That's so wild. Like, it's.
Say it, man.
I mean, it's nuts, dude.
It is. And this was the thing I thought. If somebody asked me that question just now, like, okay, what about, you know, prehistory, all that. And I've come to evolve and as getting older, you know. As a young man, you always think, oh yeah, the past and all these cool things about the past. But you really start to evolve into understanding, well, right now is really, really super important. And I guess understanding about those past things is also important. But then I think,
go ahead.
Yeah. Say it.
Dude, I'm going to say it. Like, I know that we look back at our past and we say, like, those were the people. But I guarantee you, the individuals that have kept culture alive and kept their identity alive now have done far more than any of them.
What do you mean? In what way?
They didn't have to negotiate what we're negotiating.
In
the last hundred years.
Yeah.
125 years, right?
Yeah.
The people before that, their only competition was their own way of life.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes, it could be violent. There was intertribal war. There was disease. Those are the things that are negotiated. Now, we're negotiating not only all the dysfunction, but all the badass stuff that society brings, like iPhones and fucking nano mics and bicycles and fucking, I mean, dude, like, it's just so much stuff. It's so much stuff that tells us not, it inadvertently tells us not to be who we are.
Yeah.
Yet we find a way to still make things work, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
crazy to me.
It is. It's remarkable. And so what I was thinking is, if somebody asks me that question, sometimes I think, yeah, I wonder what it is. But then the bigger part of me thinks, well, who cares? Because that time is over. not as in, you know, who cares, let go of the past. But right now, man, we're operating in the now. In the now.
No, you're right. Who cares?
Yeah. 12,000 years ago. What? Who cares?
I mean, okay, yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, ultimately we do care, but really we don't care. Like, so I mean, we care, but we don't care.
Yeah.
So as a preservation officer, of course, that's my job. I have to care.
You have to care about
it. But as an individual, my job is still dealing with the now, the right now.
Yes. So the laws, the things that you have to write, policy you guide. It's for the now. It's not for the 200 years ago. It's for the now. So this idea
I like this conversation.
I do, because this is what I've been thinking about. And it's all related to how we represent ourselves on a daily basis. So you represent your ways and your thoughts in a unique situation, your home, but you're navigating in this world of federal and state tribal policy, right? That's what you do. That's the nature of your work. I'm sitting here in an academic institution and I'm navigating the same kind of thing, same kind of laws and those kind of stuff, but not on that level. But I'm navigating these weird layers of academic understanding of pretty much about Indian things. And I have to try to guide the thought and the ideas about Indian things into what matters. And there's always this backward slip of, well, what did your ancestors do? And I'm not saying that's not shouldn't be an important thing, but it's like trying to place a process from even 50 years ago into now is difficult. So when you're looking back into a time when the economy was functioning, where we weren't in a capitalistic neoliberal whatever word the academics use these days. Whoa. Yeah. We're in today, man. So that's where the challenge is. That's where the academic challenge is. And it seems like that's kind of where the challenge is in your work is navigating the need, the tribal need of today in this weird tribal government that you have, this weird tribal government all tribes have. But we always get this question, and you hear it now, and I bet you're going to hear it tomorrow. Something about the past. Well, what about the past? It reminds me of Powwow Highway. Remember, he goes visits his auntie, or is it his great aunt? Hey, auntie, tell me about the old days or something. And she's like, everybody's always coming here asking for good old Indian wisdom. Well, I ain't got none. Now get the hell out.
Yeah, I love that. That lady's hair is too cool too.
Yeah. She reminds me of that fed up person, like, okay, it's over. It's gone. All that stuff you want to know, it's over. I mean, sure, we want to know it. And we want to try to still retain a lot of those things for today. But man, we got some work to do about the problems of today. We're not worried about what we don't know from the past. I don't know, man. No, I don't know. I don't know if that's I'm fully characterizing my thoughts. So, last clip. You ready? Then we'll wrap it
up. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Here it is. Ready?
Ready.
He's ready.
Ready, Freddy.
Oh, man, I don't know. So, this is the thing, what you just said, and it's important. You're just talking about Aaron. And I don't want, you know, like I said, you got to support what we have and the people who try hard, and I can't criticize nobody, but we have to be cautious and move forward in a manner that's going to benefit what is important. And sometimes I think, and this is my thought, is we can get a little too performative.
Okay. So this is the thing. And this is where we stand. And I think this might be a turning point in our future episodes, because I think we've been gentle. I think we've been gentle on issues. This is me now. It's not the recording, and you know that, right?
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I got you.
We've been gentle. We haven't been that critical of things that we see. I mean, I don't think we have. I don't think we've been that critical. But that's got to change. It's got to change. I'm going to put some flute music in the background. Is that, you got flute music in the background? What is that?
Well, you're starting to feel the gospel a little bit. No, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm going to put that in there because that's a good one. Yeah. No, I think it's got to change. And I think we got to change the way in which we speak about things that matter to us. And sometime I think maybe we got to be a bit more vocal in a way, and not sugarcoat some of our thoughts and ideas.
I think that's true. And what I can already understand people. I mean, people would be like, "Well, we don't want you guys." I think that also is.
Did you say?
We don't want you guys to get harsh.
Oh yeah.
But I think it's important to say that criticism and that, like, we're not going to be nice, that counts towards us too.
I think we have to be critical to ourselves too. Like I don't know, man. Like, it's weird. I wouldn't say we lie. We don't lie, obviously, but you censor what you're saying sometimes.
Yeah. 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 I do for sure.
And I mean, it's a fact. It's a fact that we are too performative as Native people. Mm-hmm. We've somehow adopted this idea that in all things we do, we have to have an audience.
Yeah.
And then for some reason we still cater to non-Indian people, which when I say that, I think people assume that I mean something like I have something against white people. I just don't understand why Native people don't put themselves first in their own stuff.
Yeah. 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 It's like,
you know what I mean?
No, I do know what you mean.
So
I do know what you mean. That's like, when I go to work every day, I have to flip a switch, the code switch,
mm-hmm.
to talk a certain way.
Living in two worlds.
No, I don't turn on the two worlds switch. That's for, that's like the panic button. You pull out the two worlds card. I don't get it. I live in two worlds. I'm sorry. I don't get it. I don't flip that switch. No, but when there's truly dialogue, truly discussion that's of Indian things, you know it, you're in it, and you feel the progress being made. And but I think one thing that's lacking is our ability to criticize and to take criticism and to take it as a positive thing. It's usually taken as a like I'm trying to put you down or pull you down. And I think historically it's been like that thought, that oppressive thought that if you criticize somebody's work, well, they're instantly going to be on the defensive and say, well, you're just trying to pull me down. You're not trying to support me. When in fact, maybe that is the intent, is to say, well, I want to explore this idea. I'm going to argue against some things that you're saying. It's not a reflection of you. It's a reflection of us trying to advance forward.
Yeah. I think it's important for us and for our listeners to understand the difference between hate and criticism.
Yeah.
It's tough, man. I know. I'm a typical Indian dude where I've had to struggle with that whole idea of criticism and like taking criticism, and man, it was tough. Sometimes it still is tough, you know.
It is. No, it is. Yeah.
So, but you have to. I mean, you have to.
Yeah.
You have to take it in order to grow, dude. It just sucks. So
that I mean, it was some desperation in that.
I just want to be good at everything I do. I don't. Like I'm drinking Pepto.
Ulcers are acting up.
Yo, ulcers. What's an ulcer?
I have no idea. Just what everybody says. Something in the stomach. Sore in the stomach, maybe. I don't know.
Damn, Pepto's good.
I remember when I was a kid, remember them little tablets? Good. Them little tablets?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was like candy. Start eating those. Can't stop.
Remember when we used to go to IHS dental and they would give us toothpaste.
Yeah.
And it tasted like candy, man. Yeah. We would like just squeeze the toothpaste.
Yeah. Chapstick too was like that. It's like candy.
Oh.
You eat chapstick. You do that?
Oh, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
I remember eating glue, dude.
Yeah.
Paste.
Yeah. It's good.
I also remember I used to love sniffing clay. In class they'd give you clay and you'd mess with clay, man. I used to just put that on my nose and just take a big old deep breath. Sometimes I wish, you know, when people say, oh, they don't have no regrets or they wouldn't do anything over, I think that's a crap, dude.
Yeah.
Why? There's a lot of stuff I do over.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
There is.
And one Yeah, this is quite a bit. But one thing that I liked school when I was young.
Yeah, me too.
Going to school, I remember like looking forward to going to school.
Yeah,
and actually, I'd probably do that over again. That like second to like fourth or fifth grade. That
yeah.
Oh, dude, that was the best. It was the best.
It was an escape for me. You know, I was like, God damn, hey, dude.
Yeah.
Get out of the crazy home life, you know.
There was some of that too for me. I don't think it was as bad as my neighbors and everything, you know, but
yeah,
I remember people like that was the only meal they got, you know.
Yeah. Didn't get yelled at,
didn't get cigarettes put out on them or
it, you know,
things were rough for people. Mm-hmm. And I remember that's why I always remembered like growing up and thinking like I had it pretty good. Looking back on it, I had a very typical reservation life and like what a lot of people would probably say is like rough and all that, but it didn't feel that way because you're always comparing yourself to your neighbor, you know.
I know. There's always that neighbor. That just got that it
rough.
That
or like I always think here you're complaining about your life and then your mom's taking care of your cousins,
so I know,
well obviously they had they have something worse, you know,
so
here you got cousins living with you or whatever, so even there was always like that reality check in your living room, you know.
Man, that's so stereotypical, but it's true, man. It's not even a stereotype, it is true. Yeah, well, let's wrap it up there, man, because I
got off track there at the end.
No, that's good though, because I was just winging it today. I had some things but kind of went off the rails, but that's all right.
We do our best work when we're winging.
I think so too. Yeah, I got some more building ideas. So, let's keep going, man. We'll keep going. I think we should get back to it, and I think we should apply this, dial up the criticism.
I still want to do one of the. I want to do like a second part to that death practices stuff.
Yeah, let's do it. And I'm gonna pin you down to a time, and you're just gonna have to just suck it up and. Do it, man.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to do it. Okay.
Okay.
So coming up, more on death.
Yeah. Peace out. Thank you.
All right.
See you, Sean Dean.
All right. Take it easy.
Later. All right, man. Good night.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. I want to take some time to thank some of our Patreon sponsors. We've got Emma LaFave, Ryan Swanson, Marzana J, Rachel Holster, Todd Davis, Louise Erdrich, Jason Friage, and Mary Bobbitt. Thank you so much for your continued contribution to help keep the show on the air. I also want to take time to thank some of our past sponsors. We've had Annie Ost pitching in. Thank you for your donation. And also Brian Carpenter, additional thank you for pitching in and helping the show stay on the air.